Chapter 27. This nature, or venture to advise or warn him regarding a matter so very sacred as his own honor, of which my lord was naturally the best guardian. But though Lady Castlewood would listen to no advice from her young dependent, and appeared indignantly to refuse it when offered, Harry had the satisfaction to find that she adopted the counsel which he professed to reject, for the next day she pleaded a headache, when my Lord Mohun would have had her drive out, and the next day the headache continued. And next day, in a laughing gay way, she proposed that the children should take her place in his lordship's car, for they would be charmed with a ride of all things, and she must not have all the pleasure for herself. My lord gave them a drive with a very good grace, though, I dare say, with rage and disappointment inwardly, not that his heart was very seriously engaged in his designs upon this simple lady. But the life of such men is often one of intrigue, and they can no more go through the day without a woman to pursue than a fox hunter without his sport after breakfast. Under an affected carelessness of demeanor, and though there was no outward demonstration of doubt upon his patron's part since the quarrel between the two lords, Harry yet saw that Lord Castlewood was watching his guest very narrowly, and caught sight of distrust and smothered rage, as Harry thought, which foreboded no good. On the point of honor, Esmond knew how touchy his patron was, and watched him almost as a physician watches a patient, and it seemed to him that this one was slow to take the disease, though he could not throw off the poison when once it had mingled with his blood. We read in Shakespeare, whom the writer for his part considers to be far beyond Mr. Congreve, Mr. Dryden, or any of the wits of the present period, that when jealousy is once declared, nor poppy, nor mandragora, nor all the drowsy syrups of the East will ever soothe it or medicine it away. In fine, the symptoms seemed to be so alarming to this young physician, who, indeed, young as he was, had felt the kind pulses of all those dear kinsmen, that Harry thought it would be his duty to warn my Lord Mohun, and let him know that his designs were suspected and watched. So one day, when in rather a pettish humor his lordship had sent to Lady Castlewood, who had promised to drive with him, and now refused to come, Harry said, "Why, Lord, if you will kindly give me a place by your side, I will thank you. I have much to say to you, and would like to speak to you alone. You honor me by giving me your confidence, Mr. Henry Esmond," says the other, with a very grand bow. My lord was always a fine gentleman, and young as he was, there was that in Esmond's manner which showed that he was a gentleman too, and that none might take a liberty with him. So the pair went out, and mounted the little carriage, which was in waiting for them in the court, with its two little cream-colored Hanoverian horses covered with splendid furniture and champing at the bit. "My lord," says Harry Esmond, after they were got into the country, and pointing to my Lord Mohun's foot, which was swathed in flannel, and put up rather ostentatiously on a cushion, "why, lord, I studied medicine at Cambridge." "Indeed, Parson Harry," says he, "and are you going to take out a diploma, and cure your fellow students of the gout?" says Harry, interrupting him, and looking him hard in the face. "I know a good deal about the gout. I hope you may never have it. 'Tis an infernal disease," says my lord, "and its twinges are diabolical." "Ah!" And he made a dreadful wry face, as if he just felt a twinge. "Your lordship would be much better if you took off all that flannel. It only serves to inflame the toe," Harry continued, looking his man full in the face. "Oh, it only serves to inflame the toe, does it?" says the other, with an innocent air. "If you took off that flannel, and flung that absurd slipper away, and wore a boot," continues Harry. "You recommend me boots, Mr. Esmond?" asks my lord. "Yes, boots and spurs. I saw your lordship 3 days ago run down the gallery fast enough," Harry goes on. "I'm sure that taking gruel at night is not so pleasant as claret to your lordship. And besides, it keeps your lordship's head cool for play, whilst my patron's is hot and flustered with drink. 'Steeth, sir, you dare not say that I don't play fair? cries my lord, whipping his horses, which went away at a gallop. You are cool when my lord is drunk, Harry continued. Your lordship gets the better of my patron. I have watched you as I looked up from my books. You young Argus, says Lord Mohun, who liked Harry Esmond, and for whose company and wit, and a certain daring manner, Harry had a great liking to young Argus, you may look with all your hundred eyes, and see we play fair. I've played away an estate of a knight, and I've played my shirt off my back, and I've played away my periwig, and gone home in a nightcap. But no man can say I ever took an advantage of him beyond the advantage of the game. I played a dice-cogging scoundrel in Alsatia for his ears and won them, and have one of them in my lodging in Bow Street in a bottle of spirits. Harry Mohun will play any man for anything, always would. You are playing awful stakes, my lord, in my patron's house, Harry said, and more games than are on the cards. What do you mean, sir? Cries my lord, turning round, with a flush on his face. I mean, answers Harry, in a sarcastic tone, that your gout is well if ever you had it. Sir, cried my lord, getting hot. And to tell the truth, I believe your lordship has no more gout than I have. At any rate, change of air will do you good, my lord Mohun. And I mean fairly, that you had better go from Castlewood. And were you appointed to give me this message? Cries the Lord Mohun. Did Frank Esmond commission you? No one did. 'Twas the honor of my family that commissioned me. And you are prepared to answer this? Cries the other, furiously lashing his horses. Quite, my lord. Your lordship will upset the carriage, if he whip so hotly. By George, you have a brave spirit, my lord cried out, bursting into a laugh. I suppose 'tis that infernal bout the Jesuite that makes you so bold, he added. 'Tis the peace of the family I love best in the world, Harry Esmond said warmly. 'Tis the honor of a noble benefactor, the happiness of my dear mistress and her children. I owe them everything in life, my lord, and would lay it down for any one of them. What brings you here to disturb this quiet household? What keeps you lingering month after month in the country? What makes you feign illness, and invent pretexts for delay? Is it to win my poor patron's money? Be generous, my lord, and spare his weakness for the sake of his wife and children. Is it to practice upon the simple heart of a virtuous lady? You might as well storm the tower single-handed. But you may blemish her name by light comments on it, or by lawless pursuits, and I don't deny that 'tis in your power to make her unhappy. Spare these innocent people, and leave them. By the Lord, I believe thou hast an eye to the pretty Puritan thyself, Master Harry, says my lord, with his reckless, good-humored laugh, and as if he had been listening with interest to the passionate appeal of the young man. Hisper, Harry. Art thou in love with her thyself? Hath tipsy Frank Esmond come by the way of all flesh? My lord, cried Harry, his face flushing, and his eyes filling as he spoke. I never had a mother, but I love this lady as one. I worship her as a devotee worships a saint. To hear her name spoken lightly seems blasphemy to me. Would you dare think of your own mother so, or suffer anyone so to speak of her? It is a horror to me to fancy that any man should think of her impurely. I implore you, I beseech you, to leave her. Danger will come out of it. Danger, sah, says my lord, giving a cut to the horses, which at this minute for we were got onto the downs fairly ran off into a gallop that no pulling could stop. The rein broke in Lord Mohun's hands, and the furious beast scampered madly forwards, the carriage swaying to and fro, and the persons within it holding on to the sides as best they might, until seeing a great ravine before them, where an upset was inevitable, the two gentlemen leapt for their lives, each out of his side of the chaise. Harry Esmond was quit for a fall on the grass, which was so severe that it stunned him for a minute. But he got up presently very sick, and bleeding at the nose, but with no other hurt. The Lord Mohun was not so fortunate. He fell on his head against a stone, and lay on the ground, dead to all appearance. This misadventure happened as the gentlemen were on their return homewards, and my Lord Castlewood, with his son and daughter, who were going out for a ride, met the ponies as they were galloping with the car behind, the broken traces entangling their heels, and my lord's people turned and stopped them. It was young Frank who spied out Lord Mohun's scarlet coat as he lay on the ground, and the party made up to that unfortunate gentleman and Desmond, who was now standing over him. His large periwig and feathered hat had fallen off, and he was bleeding profusely from a wound on the forehead, and looking, and being, indeed, a corpse. Great God! He's dead, says my lord. I'd, someone, fetch a doctor's day. I'll go home, and bring back Tusher, he knows surgery, and my lord, with his son after him, galloped away. They were scarce gone when Harry Esmond, who was indeed, but just come to himself, bethought him of a similar accident which he had seen on a ride from Newmarket to Cambridge, and taking off a sleeve of my lord's coat, Harry, with a penknife, opened a vein of his arm, and was greatly relieved, after a moment, to see the blood flow. He was near half an hour before he came to himself, by which time Dr. Tusher and little Frank arrived, and found my lord not a corpse indeed, but as pale as one. After a time, when he was able to bear motion, they put my lord upon a groom's horse, and gave the other to Esmond, the men walking on each side of my lord, to support him, if need were, and worthy Dr. Tusher with them. Little Frank and Harry rode together at a foot pace. When we rode together home, the boy said Colin we met Mama, who was walking on the terrace with the doctor, and Papa frightened her, and told her you were dead. Dot, that I was dead? Asks Harry. Yes, Papa says. Here's poor Harry killed, my dear, apostrophe on which Mama gives a great scream, and oh, Harry, she drops down, and I thought she was dead too. And you never saw such a way as Papa was in. He swore one of his great oaths. And he turned quite pale, and then he began to laugh somehow, and he told the doctor to take his horse, and me to follow him, and we left him. And I looked back, and saw him dashing water out of the fountain onto Mama. Oh, she was so frightened. Musing upon this curious history, for my Lord Mohun's name was Henry too, and they called each other Frank and Harry often, and not a little disturbed and anxious, Esmond rode home. His dear lady was on the terrace still, one of her women with her, and my lord no longer there. There are steps and a little door thence down into the road. My lord passed, looking very ghastly, with a handkerchief over his head, and without his hat and periwig, which a groom carried, but his politeness did not desert him, and he made a bow to the lady above. Thank heaven, you are safe, she said. And so is Harry too, Mama, says little Frank, uzzay. Harry Esmond got off the horse to run to his mistress, as did little Frank, and one of the grooms, took charge of the two beasts, while the other, hat and periwig in hand, walked by my lord's bridle to the front gate, which lay half a mile away. Oh, my boy, what a fright you have given me, Lady Castlewood said, when Harry Esmond came up, greeting him with one of her shining looks, and a voice of tender welcome, and she was so kind, as to kiss the young man, 'twas the second time as he had so honored him, and she walked into the house between him and her son, holding a hand of each. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.